Hello, everyone, and welcome to American Freedom Watch Radio, where we are brought to you live on bbsradio.com. Please visit our website, bbsradio.com/American Freedom Watch Radio. Visit our other websites, agenda21today.com, karenshone.com, americaismyname.org, and visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/American Freedom Watch Radio. Thank you all for joining me this evening. And before I go one step further, I want to thank all of our veterans. It is so important. You are so important to us. We would not be here without you. And all I can do is continue to scream about the service that you have received at the behest of our government. But please note, there will be good things coming very shortly. And thank you all for joining me this evening. We have a really incredible show. But before we go on, there's something that I wanted to talk to all of you about, because I just completed a week of speaking down in South Florida. This is where Jeb and Marco come from. So please remember this, because for the most part, when people are talking about Jeb and Marco, they are not talking about them, two people who live in Florida and are the living results of their failed policies, Marco included. Marco Rubio was sent to the State House in Florida for the specific reason of getting a handle on our immigration, and there was not one E-Verify bill that he voted for, nor did he vote anything to do anything to stop the illegal and legal immigration coming into our country, into our state. South Florida is inundated with refugees coming in not only from the Middle East, but remember, they're coming in from Haiti and Jamaica and now Puerto Rico and most of Latin America. Folks, the people down in South Florida, our veterans, are living in the tents, in the forest, in South Florida. The poor have no food, and we, the people, are subsidizing refugees to come into our country, and we are subsidizing them to go in business. Whose businesses do you think they are taking? Please, folks, it's very important to wake up and to pay attention. And I believe in exactly what Donald Trump said. We are a nation of laws. And Ted Cruz, we are a nation of laws. And we are to be equal under the eyes of a law. There is no law that was written for me that was any different for a law written for you. All laws are the same for each one of us. And the other thing that I realized is, with this diversity and divisiveness that is going on in our country, it is largely because our education is so poor and so lacking that the people of America have no idea the gem that they have been given, what they can do with that to enhance their lives, because they have been, this has been removed from our schools. And I thought about this really, really hard, and two sentences came to mind, so I want you to listen to them for a minute. One is right out of the Declaration of Independence, and it says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." Now, what our school marms or our professors have done is they say that means men only, and therefore they are able to segregate, separate, demonize the white, quote, white men, quote, unquote, who created these documents. If we go back to that time in history, the word men really referred to all men, humans, everyone in the human race. They didn't say blacks and women, etc. They were referring to everyone. We have to remember that. And the Constitution says exactly the same thing. It also says, I want to read it for you, in the excuse me, in the preamble to the Constitution, it says, we the people. It doesn't say we the white people, we the black people, we the Italian people, we the Jewish people. It says, we the people. So if you think of that, and you believe that our founders were talking about all the people, then why do we need these laws for different groups of people? We should not. We are all equal. And instead of being these hyphenated word Americans that start out with adjectives that are only used to divide us, we should stop and we should be called Americans, period. And today I filled out a form, and that's why I'm telling you this. And in the end of the form, it said ethnicity. And all of the ethnic groups were listed. And I said, no, I'm not answering this. So I clicked other, and I said, American. Folks, stop giving them the tools that they are able to use to divide us. And this division is nothing new. And the gentleman that's going to be on the show with me right now, his name is Randy Randolph. And first learned about Randy when he presented the book that he wrote called American History in No Time. And I love this book because it provides our children and ourselves with the knowledge and the historical facts that are necessary to understand what went on in the past, so that we can understand what's going on today. Thank you so much for joining me, Randy. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate your book. So before we go any further, tell everybody where they can get it.
It's available on my website, which is the name of the book, AmericanHistoryInNoTime.com. And from there, you can select the link that will take you to Amazon.com. Or you can go directly to Amazon.com, either way.
Okay, and the book's name is American History in No Time. And you know what? It's a fast, easy read, and that's what makes it so wonderful. So you did a fabulous job. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I wanted the title to be somewhat descriptive of what I was trying to do, which was to condense our history into a quick and easy read, so that anyone could learn the basics in just one sitting. And it's divided into short sections that can be read in around 5 or 10 minutes each, and the entire book can be read in just a few hours. So it's also a quick, it's an easy way for parents and grandparents to ensure that their families have a solid foundation. And for those of us who are no longer in school, it's the perfect refresher.
Yes, that's what I liked about it. I said, oh, I forgot that. I didn't remember that one. Whoops. Yes. Randy, can you do me a favor? Because what I see in school right now, of course, American history, the powers that be have decided that it started in 1865. So the whole 100-year segment of our country and what it was like to live in that time. See, that's what the people don't understand. So when they read these documents, as they do now in Common Core, without explanation, because they're just reading them as a reading assignment so that they can mm-hmm. say they read them, they don't understand what went on in that time in history. We had slaves. Yes, that was a bad thing. Most people don't even know that there were just as many white slaves as there were black slaves. And they also didn't know that many blacks owned white slaves. So that whole time of history is skewed. But what I was talking about before, the being able to divide when there's really no need to do that.
Right, What you said about the way the history is presented in some schools starting in 1865, as I go around the state, I have run into many parents who have told me that the textbooks of their children begin at 1900. So,
whoa, that's even worse.
it's even worse than that. So there's no no civil war, no founding of the country, no colonial period. You know, not to mention no discussion of the rich Native American civilizations that existed before European contact. So it's a shocking thing, and what I am trying to do with the book is to turn the tide. I'm really trying to change the culture, because our heritage is too precious for it to be lost, and it is a hard row to hoe to get this book, or I guess any book, into the school system. Although I am trying.
We don't have
to wait on that, because we can start to turn the tide in our own family, and that's my message. When I go around the state, is that we can take control of the situation in our own families, and make sure that we and our children and grandchildren and other relatives or friends and acquaintances, we can start to turn the tide ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this book,
yes.
This book is a tool, an easy tool to accomplish that.
Yes, it is, and I highly recommend. It's going to be Christmas time. Make it a stocking stuffer and stick it in the stockings. And then when you are with your kids or your grandkids, talk about it paragraph by paragraph. You will be amazed at the things you forgot, but more important, you will be amazed at the things they don't know. And
well, that was one of the motivations for me writing the book.
Right.
I recognize that my own children didn't know many things I assumed they were learning in school. And so I went to a number of bookstores thinking I would find a book that would be contain just the basics, divided into short sections, but so that I could sit down with each child and in 5 or 10 minutes teach them something meaningful about the country. And I went to several bookstores that day and couldn't find any book. I couldn't even find one that fit the bill. And I guess that's probably the first time I got the idea, well, maybe there are other parents like me who would like a book like that, and maybe I could write it myself. So as I was preparing little booklets to help my own children, I ran across survey after survey showing that the problem was profound and widespread across all age groups and all academic levels. And the book became more sophisticated as a result of that, and has consequently been used at a number of colleges, but it's still easy to understand for younger readers.
And that's what's so important. Our history is so rich in what we have created because of the freedoms that we have had, that what's happening now is an absolute disgrace. And it is so sad to see our children who are, take a look at Mizzou, who are following exactly the same path. They are replicating it almost verbatim of what went on in the 60s. Nothing has changed. And you would have thought that if the kids knew and learned about what went on and our founders and how we got here and the fact that, yeah, we had slavery, but you know what? We were the only country that fought a war to get rid of slavery. So get over it. You know, every loser in any war became a slave of the victor. That's the way it worked. That was the way life was at that time.
Well, what you mentioned about the University of Missouri that it has been surprising to me is we have this idea that universities and colleges are bastions of liberalism, and places where ideas can be freely exchanged. And this past week has shown that that is not the case. I mean, here are these students and professors are not interested in hearing other people's views. They want to shut it down. And, you know...
Well, sadly, the professors, you know, they're reaping what they have sown. They have sown out the seeds that if you don't speak this way, you're bad. If you don't speak this way, you're evil. If you don't believe like this, you don't count. And they teach these kids this garbage that it's me, 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 and you have to make me feel good. And if I don't feel good, then, you know, you're a bully or you're mean or whatever. And if we think about the world, I mean, think about what's going on in the world. We have Putin who's looking at his people and saying, folks, we're going to be in for some rough time, so let's work together and let's get something done, and I'm not going to tolerate people being mean to Russia or whatever. He sticks up for his people. You got ISIS teaching six-year-olds how to cut off people's heads, and you got our president over here who's saying, oh, I feel bad. If you feel bad, they're mean. It must be the cop's fault because you're really just, oh, a poor, poor child who bad things must have happened to you. It's pathetic. It's not the real world. It's not the real world. And you know what the buffer was? The buffer always was that elementary school through high school, we had a full education, so that by the time we got to college, we were able to say, I'm not taking that class. You were able and capable to make choices. When the kids get all of this garbage in pre-K, and by the time they go to college, it's ingrained, this is very, very bad and scary.
Well, the... one of the shocking statistics that I sometimes mention in my speeches is that only 18% of the colleges and universities in the country require a course in fundamental American history and government. Only 18%. Most colleges offer the American History Survey course, but it's not required, and so they can satisfy. Now there's a cafeteria approach to satisfying the requirements to get a degree, and so it's possible to satisfy those requirements, those loose requirements, with peripheral courses. In the humanities, social sciences, general education, but only 18% require a course in fundamental American history and government, and I think that is reflective of some of the problems that we face as a nation.
I couldn't agree more, but I'm even stronger on that, and I believe it is the problem, because education or going to school is the least common denominator. You may have a child, you may not have a child, you may get married, you may not get married. You all went to school.
Right.
So by indoctrinating in school, this is the result of that indoctrination.
Well, that's true, but what I was pointing to is that it's not just indoctrination; it's a void of
oh ignorance. Yeah, void of
mm-hmm. if because there are relatively few colleges that even require the course, so.
That's shocking.
So it's like it doesn't even matter, and it just shows an ignorance of the responsibility of citizens in a representative form of government.
Wow. Yes. Most people don't understand that.
It's not surprising that you can't tell me that the what we see in Washington and the ineptitude is not a result of the electorate knowing so little about what they do there and how the government is.
Of course, you're 100% right, Wayne. That's why I don't like it when people say Americans are stupid. They're not stupid, they're ignorant, and that is being done on purpose. And all of the left's heroes, all of the communist heroes, I call them communists because eventually that's what they all become, but all of their heroes all said the same thing, give me the school. You know, give me your child, what was it, Lenin, give me your child for 8 years and I'll make him a Bolshevik. He said that. Hitler said, give me the youth, Hitler's youth, and, you know, he will turn them into his German force, which he did. And what was it? Castro created the pioneers. So they all go after the youth. That's the first thing they go after. And it's not a surprise that this has happened. What is the sad part is when you look at the candidates and you realize that the majority of them have no idea either.
Well,
and look at our legislators.
Yeah. Well, the institutions of our society play a role in the way our civilization progresses or declines, and the basic unit of society is the family, and mm-hmm. with the breakdown of the family, then it seems as though the default institution is the government, and that has grave consequences, I think, for our future.
I agree with you. I believe that the purpose of the school is to replace the family, so that you replace the family with the school. And I even got an email the other day, and it said, I couldn't remember who it was from, but it says, love your teacher, she is your second mother. My what? Your what? So that's the breakdown of the family is becoming because this is what the kids are being taught in school. And I remember a while back when Al Gore was VP or right after, and he made a statement and he said, don't listen to anybody over 30. Okay, so this is their goal, is to replace the family with school. Some schools are giving breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Right.
That's really
school,
nice.
School and government.
And then replace God with government, because their rights are now granted by God.
Right. And one
but
of the problems...
Who is the government?
One of the problems with that, and I think it stems from ignorance of our history and our founding, is that instead of the healthy skepticism that everyone should have about government in general, that has gone away. We're reaching the point where a majority of society looks to government as being the savior of things that are every aspect of our lives, and that is very dangerous. For most of our history, there's been a a skepticism of government and a wariness, and that's healthy. Our founders were wary of centralized power, and that's why they devised a system that would limit it. And the first attempt at a national government, the Articles of Confederation, proved to be inadequate because they were so concerned about giving too much power to the central government. Now, they went too far, and the government wasn't strong enough to be effective. And so that was one of the reasons for the calling of the Constitutional Convention. But they were wary of centralized power because they knew human nature, and they knew there would always be some people in authority who would want to unnecessarily restrict the freedoms of others. I like the quote by James Madison. He said, "If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary." And we know we certainly don't have angels in our government.
No, not at all. And that is the big problem, which, again, to me, comes from knowledge or lack of knowledge of what is going on in school. Because in school, the children, I mean, you listen to this and you say, I have a right to have a house. I have a right to have a car. I have a right to go to school. I have a right to do this. No, you don't. You have a Bill of Rights that tells you what you have granted to you by God, but you have the ability to get those items. You don't have a right to anything that's tangible. That's not what a right is about.
Yeah, it's equal opportunity.
That's
not,
right.
Equal outcomes.
Exactly. And that's what the kids are being taught, that they have a right, that it is their right that I have to give them something. Why do I have to give them something? What have they done for me lately? Nothing. And they don't know that. They don't understand that. And they are being taught that it is perfectly acceptable to have your hand out at all times and get whatever you can by scamming the government.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we're fast approaching, if we haven't already reached the tipping point, to where there are a majority of people with that mentality. But I still think that conservatives are still a majority, and people that want to be self-reliant. But what I tell people is that even though I still think we're a majority, we don't have to be a majority. It was a determined minority that brought forth this nation. And,
exactly.
And as I go around, I am very encouraged because I see the fire of liberty still burning brightly in thousands of people.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so I'm very encouraged, very encouraged.
That is absolutely wonderful, and I agree with you. I see the same thing. And it's very evident when you look at the candidates and the top three people who have more than 50% of the voters that are polled are looking at conservatives and are agreeing with conservative values. I just read an article that they said Ted Cruz skyrocketed yesterday because of what he was talking about with immigration. The people understand it, and they get it. But
yeah, and it's surprising that so many of the Republican candidates, the Democrats don't even figure into the conversation with regard to immigration because none of them espouse the rule of law.
Well, their agenda, which they follow, is Agenda 21, and that calls for open borders, and that's why anybody who is for another trade agreement like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the purpose of those agreements is to have borderless areas that can be controlled monetarily, not by law. And this is what that evolution, that transformation is that they are looking for. So it's refreshing to see, it's wonderful to see that there are still enough Americans who say, wait a minute, you know, I don't like that. And I'm not going to do it just because you say you like it. And that's why Marco Rubio, to me, is so scary, because Marco Rubio, I don't care what he says. He will never convince me that he will do anything to close a border or to stop. He might stop illegal immigration by deportation. He might, you know, he would probably take out Obama's laws, but not to the point where he would eliminate them, challenge them, veto them, stop them. He would never do that.
Yeah. Well, it's surprising that all the Democrats, presidential candidates, and maybe a majority of the Republican candidates minimize the rule of law.
Because they don't understand it.
Well, I guess they don't understand it and don't fully understand the ramifications of that policy, and people should ask themselves, what is the motivation for that? I mean, why would you, in an economy when tens of millions of people have dropped out, where wages are stagnant, why would you be in that environment before increasing immigration? I mean, it absolutely makes no sense. And so if people would just stop for a minute and question what the motivation would be for that, then you would have to conclude that it's for political power.
Yes. Well,
the ultimate goal is to give these people the right to vote, and presumably they would vote for the people who gave them that right.
Right, exactly. And also, you have to follow the money. You can't think that these people are getting or have gotten where they are by their own dime. It didn't work that way. Somebody gave them something. And in Rubio's case, he got boku bucks from sugar, and he got boku bucks from Silicon Valley. So is his allegiance to the American people? His allegiance was never even to the people in Florida. If his allegiance was not to the people in Florida, then why would I think that he's going to protect Americans also? So he is the, quote, establishment replacement, Jeb Bush replacement. And frankly, I don't see a difference between the two of them.
Well, here's the problem, I think, with him and any other candidate, that campaigns on one platform and then goes to Washington and does something else. And in his specific case, he campaigned that he would not support amnesty. And then when he got with Chuck Schumer and the Gang mm-hmm. of Eight, that's what he supported. And so whether you believe in amnesty or not, the bigger point might be that he didn't do what he said he would do. And so he was elected under one premise, and then did something else when he went to Washington. I've never served in Washington, so I don't know what the pull is, and how that that
money.
Environment.
Money, lobby money. Money.
Yeah,
plus,
but how many people get turned?
How many what?
How many people go to Washington and turn?
They all do, unless you're a Louis Gohmert who won't turn for anybody. We even had, I had a conversation with my legislator, Steve Sutherland, who we, I'm so happy, got out of office. And even though he was replaced by a Democrat, we know she was how she was going to vote. So it didn't much matter. And we knew that Obama would do whatever he wanted anyway, so it didn't much matter. But when we spoke to Steve, he said, well, you know, I have to go to breakfast and lunch, and I have to go to these meetings, and Boehner likes me, and besides, what do you want me to do? Go against the grain like Louis Gohmert? Yes. We don't want you to go up there to be an attaboy when you told us exactly as you said, I'm going to go there and I'm going to vote against immigration and I'm going to vote against this and I'm going to vote against that. And then they turn around and go there and vote in the absolute opposite direction. So it's quite a challenge. And hold on, I have to shut off a bell.
Well, it really all boils down to the voting booth, and it's very frustrating for conservatives when we elect people that we think are going to enforce conservative principles, and then that doesn't happen. And I sense, you know, maybe more than a lot of other people, certainly more than a lot of the political pundits who don't understand the appeal of somebody like Donald Trump. And mm-hmm. and even with his brashness and his boorishness in a lot of ways, I mean, it's off-putting for him to criticize other Republicans and two-term Republican presidents. I know, I get all of that. But conservatives, many conservatives are willing to overlook that because of this, primarily the immigration issue. And
yes.
And he has been unyielding, and that is refreshing to people. And I believe, like Ann Coulter has said, that immigration is the defining issue of this election. And if conservatives don't get that right, then nothing else matters. Because if that happens, then there will never be a Republican president again.
You're absolutely
right. And we can see what happens when Republicans control both houses of Congress. That it's very difficult when you have a president pulling in the opposite direction. The executive branch has tremendous power, and you know I would say too much power, And so, if we don't win the presidency this time, I really worry for the future of the country.
I do also, and I agree with you 100%. I also feel that although I may not love everything that he says, I'm willing to overlook them because of exactly what you said. If he builds a wall and shuts off the immigration spigot, and we stop giving entitlements to people who tell us, I'm going to kill you and I hate you, then we have a home run. And if he does the other things, I think that's the icing on the cake.
Right.
But I agree with Ann Coulter also. You cannot look what's going on in Europe. Do we want that coming here?
Yeah. And where does it stop? It's obvious. It should be obvious to everyone that it's unsustainable. But it really goes back to the rule of law. If we're not a nation of that's governed by law, then we're no different from any other country, and that is not what has made this country great. So it goes back to really to 1965. That's when the Immigration Act of 1965. That's when it started to come off the rails.
Can you explain to everybody how that changed things? That really did. You're right.
That was a sea change. Because it was with that act, the focus for immigration was the uniting of the uniting of families, the reuniting of families, and not the skills of the applicants. That's really when it started, and so the limits that were set. Because people were concerned concerned about the consequences of that vote, of that bill when it came up for a vote, and they were assured by all the liberals that no, the limits of 170,000 I get them confused. I think it's 170,000 per year for the Western Hemisphere and 120,000 for the Eastern Hemisphere. I might have that reversed, but anyway, they said those limits will never be exceeded, so that's not a concern. Well, by the 1980s, immigration had surged to 800,000, far exceeding the limit, because of the limits did not apply on the reuniting of families who foreigners who already had a relative who was an American citizen or had a resident who was a resident alien. So, yeah. And the numbers are still approaching a million a year, and it's but that's when it started. It was 1965, and this is just another thing where that you have to be wary of government, because what they say is not. It is usually not the way it turns out.
Well, that's because they lie. And that's because they actually, if we actually did the opposite of what they say, we would be in great shape. Because they always tell you the opposite of what they really mean. And there's always a motive for that.
Well, candidates will often say we are a nation of immigrants, and we absolutely are. There's no denying that. But there has to be some control over the process, and that's why we've had immigration laws. And mm-hmm. People just have to ask themselves if it is not cause for concern when the foreign-born population in this country in 1960 was 5% of the population. 50 years later, after the this change in the focus of reuniting families over the job skills of the applicant. So 50 years later, in 2010, it was 13%.
What's wrong with this picture?
That's a huge shift. And also the shift away from Europe to Latin America and Asia. So it is a major problem, and you can't just go around and say we have a broken immigration system and we're going to just ignore everything that's happened up till now and just start afresh. There has to be a recognition of what got us to this point, and how do we fix the people that are here illegally, so that we can maintain one of the foundational principles of our country, which is the rule of law.
Well, one of the things I believe that we need to be doing, high priority numero uno, is to shut off all of the entitlements, because that is the magnet. Yes, they want to come here to work. Ha, ha, ha. When they get entitlements that even Americans don't get. So I believe that if we shut off the entitlements, many of them wouldn't come, and many of them would go back.
Well,
if they're not working.
Well, entitlements is one thing, but what Governor Romney advocated was the E-Verify to place the burden on employers, and so if that magnet was taken away, or it wouldn't be taken away, but because you can't audit everyone, but at least it would certainly curtail it.
Yes.
But if the enforcement is with the employers, then he got scoffed at for saying that they would self-deport. But it's true.
This is where we have the problem with Marco Rubio, because he doesn't believe that. He would not sign for E-Verify in Florida. Hence, we got a $8 billion bill for the, quote, immigrants, illegal, in the state of Florida. And he refused to vote, or even, I don't even think he allowed the bill to be heard, but don't quote me on that one. I'd have to look it up. I just know that he refused to vote for it. So anybody that thinks that Marco Rubio is going to change his mind on immigration just because he's standing on a podium and wants to be presidential and say the things that the people want to hear, just remember that he didn't. Look at his past. You know, somebody asked me the other day, or a friend of mine the other day, which I thought was very clever, I don't understand you, how come you like Donald Trump? And he said, well, Donald Trump never made a bill or never allowed a bill to pass that was harmful to Americans. And he's right. So maybe it's time for that change, that we could use. But
I didn't mean to talk so long about immigration, but this is
very, very, very important and enlightening, and this is it. This is very important. Ann Coulter is right. What will happen is that America will cease being America, because these people believe that they come to America, the American government is wonderful. When they're poor and wherever they're coming from, they're living in a tent. And when they're coming to America, they get an apartment and transportation and their health care and schools and blah, 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 blah. So they think that coming here is wonderful, and you hit the nail on the head. They will never vote for people who say you can't come and bring your family and the rest of the world along with you.
Right, and it's always amazing to me that our national debt is north of $18 trillion, and so little is mentioned about it. I mean, it is a It was interesting when the joint, I think it was Admiral Mullen, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he surprised people when he was asked what the number one threat was to national security, and he said our national debt. And I believe mm-hmm. that. I mean, it's, you know, maybe it's so outrageous at this point that it's not mentioned very much because people don't want to face the reality of the horror of it.
But most of the people have no idea what that even means because the economic model in school that they're learning is that the one with the biggest debt is the winner because you leverage the debt. So they think having a big debt is great, so they don't even think about it. And besides, they get their little card with their allowance, so they're happy.
Well, some way we have to figure out how to present this in a way that makes sense to everyone. That
you're right. You have to write another book.
That it's immoral to pass debt of this magnitude onto not just your children, but your children and maybe their children. I mean, it's approaching the level where it will never be paid back.
But they don't care.
What does that say about the morality of this country that we are willing to pass this down to our own children and grandchildren? I mean, it's immoral, and we have to say it. We have to say the truth.
Yes, you're right. That's a very, very, very important thing that you just said. It is communication. Communication is key, and if you don't communicate, it doesn't matter. So, people, you can listen to a wonderful show like this with Randy Randolph, who wrote a fabulous book. Who wrote a fabulous book called American History in No Time. Randolph Russell. Please go buy his book and bring America back to your family. I want to thank you so much for joining me this evening, Randy. I really appreciate it so much, and it has been enlightening, and unfortunately, we are at the end of the show, at the end of our time. So, folks...
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it also, and please, folks, this is America. This is what America is about. Nobody is going to stand over you and tell you what to do unless you are a Democrat, because they have to tell you what to do, because that what they are telling you to do is so foreign that the only way that you will do it is when they tell you to. So we have to come back to being free thinkers again. And the only way you will be able to be a free thinker is when you know your history, and when you know what is happening, and when you know what your government is doing, and when you act, and when you hold people accountable as you hold yourself. Take responsibility for your actions. People say to me, Karen, how did this happen? How did we get in this terrible mess? And my answer to them is, look in the mirror, because we are the ones that did that. We are the ones that closed our eyes and allowed people like Bill Ayers to write American history books that are now being used or will be used in our school. We are the ones that stepped back and said, it's acceptable to teach our children how to have sex when they're 9 years old. That's okay. It's okay to teach our children that they don't have to talk to their parents, they don't have to respect their parents, and to learn that the government grants them their rights. The government does not grant anything unless you allow them to do it. And this is the time we have to stop allowing them to do it. Carly Fiorina was right yesterday when she said it is time to take our government back. And the way to do that is to get engaged, go to meetings, and say no. You have to learn that word. There's nothing wrong with it. It's actually a good word. It puts up boundaries. Children like boundaries. Governments need boundaries, and nations need boundaries. So we have to say no. No to Marco Rubio, who is only a pretty face. So join us again next 2 weeks when you will get in another wonderful show. We'll have Patrick Wood on. We'll talk about technocracy. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, karenshoengut.com, americaismyname.com, and our Facebook site, facebook.com/American Freedom Watch Radio. Sign up for our newsletter and share it with as many people as you can. There is no other time than now. I thank you all for joining me this evening. It has been wonderful. And thank you to our veterans. You are wonderful. God bless you. God bless you all. And God bless America.